Yes, good morning. It is Dubai Today with myself, Alex Capper-Murdoch and Samini Shaheem. I've actually got that almost right after all
Perfect.
These years.
No, it's absolutely
Yay.
Right.
Thank you. Listen, we were talking about jet lag. Thank you very much for coming in this morning as well, because I know that you are suffering a bit yourself.
Yeah.
I'm not suffering so much because I sleep every afternoon. So
I'm quite lucky.
I take my naps. I'm like a child. Mm-hmm. I keep taking child naps. Mm-hmm. But one of the things I was thinking about when traveling on holiday was we were saying about the phones.
Yeah.
When you travel, are you one of these people that you pack your suitcase and it's got your clothes and your makeup and everything, and then you pack another bag that's got your UAE phone, a phone for wherever you're going?
Incredible.
I've got, I've got two smartphones, an iPod, an iPad, plus my MacBook.
There you go.
And I leave one MacBook at
Yeah,
home.
Absolutely. You know, apparently, Alex, we're packing lighter. So in terms of clothing and what we're taking on holiday, because we don't want to be bothered with that excess weight and so on. But we're packing much heavier in terms of our technologies. So in terms of our devices. And it's if you felt your suitcase being a little bit heavier this year or your hand luggage, then it probably is related to the number of laptops and iPads and devices that people travel with. Up until about, I guess, 2 years ago, I was more conscientious about this and thought that I really want to leave behind my laptop. And when I'm on holiday, I don't want to take it along with me. But you know what? In today's world and our commitments and you know, obligations and different work-related issues that we're involved in, somehow, sometimes you just need to respond to an email or we feel we need to respond to an email while we are away. And it may not be viable or possible for us to wait 2 weeks after we've returned. And not to mention, who wants to get back to mountains and mountains of emails?
But isn't it funny? Emails are one thing and you sort of think, right, that's it. I'm going to steer clear of my emails, even though it's really difficult to do because
yeah.
it's that concern and worry of what if there's something important, which we probably didn't have 10 years ago because if it
no.
was important, it came through the post box and we weren't at home when we were on holiday.
Right.
But it's also the social media aspect that
Absolutely.
Means that we want to tell people where we are and what we're
mm-hmm.
doing, and we're quite nosy. We want to know what other people are doing.
Yeah,
I'm a bit of a nightmare on Facebook. When I have the time, I'm always having
You're
a look
on
and
it.
Seeing what people
yeah.
are doing.
Yeah. Well, that is one of the main topics that we're going to be looking at today as well, and talking about the way in which our connectivity to the internet, how is it affecting us? Is it restructuring and reprogramming our brains? How is it impacting us psychologically? What are the advantages and disadvantages of it? And you know, there was this research that was done recently in Science Daily in June 8th, 2012, and they said that more than 45% they found that people on vacation decided that they would take their devices, and that include their mobile phones and their laptops and their iPads and so on. So gone are the days when we used to buy postcards, you know, and send a postcard to our family members or to our friends from the locations that we are. Right now, all we need to do is take a picture and upload. But what is causing anxiety at times is, for example, if the wireless connection in the hotel room doesn't work very well, or you're not always connected to the wireless facilities in that particular city that you're in, or if you are planning to buy a pay-as-you-go chip, it doesn't work the same way in that location as it does over here, because you know it's not as simple everywhere else as it is in the UAE. We had such trouble in Canada trying to get a pay-as-you-go chip and to top it off, and I'd forgotten that if people call you, you also get charged.
No way.
Yes.
Well,
so
even if you're in the same country.
If you're in the same city, and if someone calls you, not only does that person pay for the call, but you also get charged. So I would top up my card for, you know, $20, $40, and it would be gone within a couple of days. And I couldn't understand what was happening, and I went and asked the representative there, and he said, yeah, well, you get charged for getting getting calls and messages as you do for making them. So very different systems.
It's funny, actually, because saying about this anxiety of things, it's amazing the anxiety we get nowadays from what seems like nothing. No wonder my grandmother is going mad at me. I too went and got a pay-as-you-go chip the last time I was in the UK, and I've been back a couple of times.
Yes.
Same thing. The credit just goes.
Yeah.
Not that I was being charged for incoming calls, not that anybody was phoning me.
No, but it does. It really does. But you know, these devices and our connectivity, they're not just another delivery system. They've created entire new sort of mental environments where the digital state of the human mind is constantly on and constantly connected. There was a study that was done at MIT that talked about texting has become like blinking, and the average person, regardless of age, sends or receives about 400 texts a month, four times the 207 number. So it has gone up four times from 200 the year 2007. We send about 400 texts a month, and the average teenager possesses an astounding 3,700 texts a month, which is also double the figure that they calculated in 2007.
Now, is that something to do with the fact, I know we spoke about this before, saying that my brother always uses, we don't have them here, but for me, when I go home to the UK, I'm not very sure about Canada, they have these self-service checkouts, so you don't actually have to speak to somebody when you go to a shop. You literally just scan your own shopping through and pay the money. And I said to my brother, but that's ridiculous. You don't have to talk to anyone. He said, exactly. I don't have to talk to anyone all day. Now, funnily enough, I've noticed that teenagers generally, they're not so interested in talking on the phone anymore. They're more interested in actually
texting.
Communicating by text.
Yeah.
Is that
absolutely
a huge change in our technological revolution?
Absolutely, it is. And it's changing the way in which we interact. It's changing the way our connectivity and our sociability to others, the way in which people see themselves and understand themselves, the way they get feedback from others. And it's altering that kind of one's identity, you know. So if you think about it from an adolescent point of view, these are the years, the developmental years in which a person's identity is forming. And if their identity is being shaped by the messages that they're getting written down in text form or through Facebook or other social media, it can be quite confusing. So many teenagers will say they post things so that they can get likes and they can get positive feedback based on what they've shared with their friends or family members. And if they're not getting as many likes, they also report feeling very down and depressed and upset about that kind of feedback that they're getting. So lots of different issues and lots of different negative psychological phenomena associated with this connectivity.
Are there positives, though? I mean, we often talk about the negatives of change and how our society is developing, but what are the positive points of the way we're communicating?
Yeah, you're right. We can't say that it's all negative. You see, there's, for example, there's ways in which these natives, we call them digital natives, so teenagers and young adults have been born almost into this digital world. So they learn how to have this virtual association, and it is through this virtual world that they're going to be learning, living, getting their information, and so that familiarity is very important to them. It also helps kids who are shy to be more social or to be able to express themselves in written form. So we know that many people who are naturally introverted may not be comfortable communicating verbally or in person, face to face. But if they have taken the time to think about different issues or to measure their words or their thoughts, then in terms of social utility sites and things like Facebook, it allows them the time and the pace at which they would like to express themselves. It can be positive in that way. It's also good for improving self-esteem if you're getting positive feedback, especially college students. So there was a study done at Cornell University, and it found that if you use Facebook or Twitter in moderation and it's not a sort of tool for whinging or complaining or for nagging, and that you're sharing, you know, positive things or bits of news, that the feedback you get from that can increase connectivity to family and friends and actually increase one's self-esteem and confidence. So there are some positives.
Yeah, and also I find it quite funny that, I mean, even this morning, it was quite bad this morning. Generally, I will not go on the internet in the morning because I only have time to get up, get ready and get to work.
Right.
But I must have got up early or something, and I thought, well, I'll have my breakfast and I'll have a look on Facebook. And I know you were there as well.
Yes.
Because we saw one another.
That's right.
But it's funny when you see something, you're laughing yourself, but you know that other people are laughing. It's just that you're not doing it in that group in front of one another. So I suppose the downfall is that there are, must be quite difficult to restrict what, especially children, what they're seeing and how they're communicating.
Definitely. And that's a very difficult role for parents to be able to monitor that. There are different consequences and results with the use of these websites and connectivity to the internet for children than there are for adults. And generationally and across cultures, things are different as well. So when we look at digital natives versus digital immigrants, for example, or visitors and refugees, our connectivity to the internet is very much, if we can metaphorically associate this with cross-cultural travelers, people who travel to a particular location for a period of time. So we've got immigrants, we've got tourists, we've got refugees, and we've got locals, right? Natives who live there. Mm. With the internet, it's the same. So the younger generation, they're the digital and internet natives. So they're very much connected. They do things on the computer, and they're very familiar with that particular domain. Now, the other groups that I mentioned that we'll look at in slightly more depth, are their connectivity is very different.